All right, we have here Charlie Ruiz, founder of CLR Connections. We had the absolute pleasure of linking up at Ben Newman's event in Vegas. And then Charlie, a couple weeks later, was in Orlando when we were there, and we had a great coffee and we just hit it off because former athletes, total alignment. What's up, brother?
Man, good to see you again. I'm happy to
be
here.
You as well, man. You as well. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, brother. So why don't we just hop right into it? Tell us a little bit more, because this resonates a lot. I've heard your story. Landon's heard your story. But our audience is pretty much the exact same archetype as what stories we have. Walk us a little bit through kind of what life was like and kind of where it is today.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think as a former athlete, you spend and you dedicate a lot of your time. And I always identified as solely, you know, an athlete for so long. And then as what happens in sports, eventually you have some sort of surgery, or you get released, or your career's over, or you decide to make a pivot and you shift. So I was fortunate to be able to live my life on a baseball diamond for 25 years and get drafted and live a childhood dream. And it was taken away from throwing baseballs for a living, right? Shoulder surgery, labrum cuff, puts you in a state where you're like, all right, now what? And I spent a good 7 to probably 8 years trying to figure out now what, and then ended up walking into a communications firm and walked into the world of personal development, leadership development, coaching, training, which is kind of how we connected. And that's part of what I'm up to now. It's being able to combine my world in performance and sport, and then the communication lens and training that I received over the past probably 10 years or so.
Tell us more about today. So you know, more specifically, yeah. Who are you impacting today, and what does business look like for you more specifically?
Thank you. It's threefold. So I have corporate clients. So I think a lot of technology companies that I work with from a one-on-one level, whether you're a product leader or a sales leader, I kind of work with you on the management skills, the soft skills that are the hard skills. A lot of organizations will hire people who have wild intellect and knowledge and background. Then they get into what we call the real world, and they got to be able to communicate with the team. So from a corporate lens, I work with a lot of new product managers, new sales managers, and I'm also gathering new senior leaders that take over teams and go, wait a second, I've been crushing it as a sales leader, and now I got to manage people, like actually manage them. So that's usually the corporate side of it. And then the other part of it is the actual athlete or a team. On the mental performance side of it, being able to work with, whether it's somebody who's trying to go to the Olympics this summer, or it's a minor league guy or a major league pitching coordinator, a lot of it's around setting up their systems and their processes, just like we did back in sport, so that they can perform in mainly 4 different areas of their life. And that's kind of the foundation that I work on with anyone in the mental performance side.
Is that where you, like when you got out of baseball, is that the first leap you took, is more on the athletic side and the coaching, consulting in that space? Like what did things look like for you right when you got out of baseball? I know you said you went into a communications firm, but like at what point did the leap take place where you started to truly just double down on Charlie?
Yeah. When did I take the leap? It was about 8 years too late. When I first started, I dismissed. I think me and Antonio talked a little bit about it. I dismissed. I didn't talk about sport. I didn't want to. So I had to refine myself, and I got into sales, because when you live in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, you get into sales. But then you get into sales. And at that point, I was like, I still had not talked about my background or leaned into it. And I was selling software, not as satisfied with everything I was doing, to where then it finally ignited. And when I got back on the field and started coaching a local private high school, and I was like, man, there's something about this impact that I need to have more of in my life. So then I walked into this communications firm probably 8 years after I retired and was introduced to it. And that was about 6-7 years ago at this point. And that's when I learned, like, okay, sure, this is the thing. People do this for a living.
So walk us through Charlie's coaching process and then how you came to that process, right? Like in the initial phases, like after baseball, it's like, dude, I don't know what the hell to do with my life, right? And then you start to formulate some principles, some, you know, really good foundations around how a coaching practice should be built and how athletes should start to be wired to get into the professional world. But walk us through how you crafted your process and what it looks like today.
Yeah, I'll walk you through the three different kind of lanes of the coaching process, because it differs based on the individual, as you would imagine. Mindset communication, or identity. It's usually one of those three frames that I take when I'm working with somebody. So when it comes to working with, say, an athlete or even somebody who is maybe in the military, who's transitioning, trying to figure out what I want to do next. If I'm talking identity, the first thing we do, if there's a four-step process for identity that I like to reference, first one is you got to actually go back a little bit. And I know that's uncomfortable for people, right? Acknowledge what was. Acknowledge what was. Right? Think about those times, moments, teams, people that shaped you and how you show up today, which is the goal. So acknowledge where you were. And then the next step is to be able to accept what's happening now. What is my truth? What is the actual reality of me in this current state? The good, the bad, all of it. And then the next step is, where do I want to be? Like, where do I see myself as a former athlete, as a former salesperson, as not an athlete, just where do I want to be? And then of those three steps, there's a friction point in between where I'm currently at and where I want to go. And the underlying thing with identity, when you actually go back to the past, which is why we start there, is a lot of the stuff that we love and that we do is actually centered and rooted back, way back to where we were. So from an identity lens, that's usually the four-step kind of frame that I work with somebody, whether it's, you know, three sessions or it's just something that we are constantly iterating on within our actual coaching practice.
What's and a specific exercise? Sure. So what's a specific exercise that you do to walk through this? Because, like, I mean, I've done this before, like walking through some of these past traumas. It's definitely not easy. And especially as an athlete, like letting go of a specific identity sometimes is wildly uncomfortable, but also like that identity also really helps serve you in business if you use it to the right advantage. So how do we understand who we are and uncover this trauma, accept it, and continue down this path of using this identity as leverage, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, I hear you. So how to actually make it work for you, right? I think one of the things that came to me recently, actually working with one of my dear friends and mentors, is this concept of the self-discrepancy theory. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. But the steps is kind of what I just aligned and what I shared with you is the exercise is writing out who you ought to be. Who you ought to be. This is usually externally driven, externally given. At the young age of being a 7-8-year-old. Now here's what you ought to be, right? Here's what you got to do. You ought to be this. That still exists today, right? As a father. I ought to be in shape. I ought to be disciplined. I ought to be kind. I ought to be all these things that are given to me from somebody else. Write down all your oughts, wherever they come from. And then that second state is write down the now, right? Actually, here's what I am, right? I am a bit odd. I actually do like control a bit more than maybe I should. I actually am this. And then the third step is, well, ideally, I want to be able to run a sub-4 marathon. Ideally, I want to be able to delegate and not control X, Y, and Z. Ideally, I want to be a dad who can do this. So those, getting time to answer all three of those questions, I think is the start of anything, especially when it comes to, I think, some of the rooted work in the self-discrepancy theory, because if there's a friction point of the ought to the ideal, or the actual to the ideal, that's when we suffer.
What are your thoughts, or, you know, what advice do you have for, you know, people going through that identity crisis, maybe in that transition, or maybe they've been out of their athletic past for some time, but there's still these expectations from people around them, right? Your parents, your spouse, your kids, everyone has expectations that they kind of project onto you as well, right? So, like, I guess maybe could you riff on that a little bit and just think through what your advice would be for someone who's maybe struggling with all these expectations and answering the question of who should I be, right? Yeah. Like, who should I be? Well, everyone's telling me what I should be, but like, who should I actually be?
How do you actually handle how do you deal with the expectations of other people after you're done?
Because when you're an athlete, right, like, you know what the deal is. Like, we're going to go win. We're winning. I'm the guy. Like, rally around me. Let's rock. You know what I mean? And that's the core that you hold on to. When that core gets lost, there's an identity shift. Even for the folks that maybe have found a new trajectory,
sure,
they're still competing in their own way. They're still now navigating as a what we would call a business athlete. they're still now navigating the expectations of everybody else around them. Could be business partners, spouses, kids, friends, et cetera. Like, just, I just wanted you to hear your advice on just expectations of others in general and how to internalize some of that in answering the question of who should I be?
Yeah. I'll answer that in two parts. Expectations, I try to remove them. I know that's kind of odd. If my standards are a specific level, I have a specific standard, a high standard. And my expectation is that people are going to ask me questions. They're going to help. They're going to do this. I'm going to show up to this event. I'm going to have a conversation with this person. And I expect this, whatever it is. Most of the time, I'll be disappointed. So if that's the case, I try to just remove the expectation, and then I'm surprised. I'm surprised when something happens. I'm surprised when somebody proactively does the thing that I probably would have expected. But if I remove it, again, it goes back to like, what is within my control? Everything I'm doing is like, where's my feet? Right here, right now. What is within my control? It's my effort, my energy, and how I'm showing up. And I can't let anything else deter me. It goes back to one of my mother's favorite, you know, isms, right? Like, know your players. Know your players. And the other one is, it is what it is. I used to always give her a lot of, you know, like, come on. It is what it is. What is that? But then I looked at it and I was like, that's cold. She's so rooted in who she is. It is what it is. It's good. No expectations. We're good. I know what I need to do. So that's kind of one part. Now, how to handle that, I think externally, when you're, you know, trying to figure out and you still have the expectations from other people, it just goes back to, this is truly a you versus you game. And that starts with going back to, what about the game? What about this environment do I truly enjoy? Baseball is boring. It's a long sport. Long sport. And I'm a closer at the end of the game. So I would show up to the ballpark. When I was with the Rockies, I'd show up at like 10:30 in the morning, lift, train. I'd pitch at 9:30 at night. What did I love about the game? I like sitting in the bullpen talking shop with the guys. I could have sat there in silence. Nah, let me be curious. So then I look at it now. I'm like, how does that show up in my work? When I meet gentlemen like you, when we're in Vegas at this event trying to get better, I'm curious. I had 20 years of being curious in outfield. That serves me now. But I did the work to understand what about me then still shows up that I love now. And I love connection. I love talking. I love communicating and understanding people's stories.
As someone who has been a bullpen catcher before, those are some of the most fun times ever, man. Like, sometimes you don't even know like what the score of the game is, because you guys are just like, we're playing some BS in the outfield. It's a great time. Heckling Ripples. The right fielder. What a blast, man. Miss it. So with that, I would almost, for personal experience, what I've come to find and how to deal with that from the external side is being so rooted in your habits that you continue to provide the evidence to your subconscious that you actually are becoming this person. So you're no longer insecure when people try and throw their expectations on you. Yeah. And I guess that is something that I admire so much about you. When I first met you, is like, you are so rooted in where you are and so where your feet are, to the point of like, you just ran a marathon for fun in this like really cool, walking down, I guess, running down memory lane type of setting. Like, walk us through that. Like, what inspired you to do that? And like, how you created a system to continuously like be where your feet are while you're running at the same time. It's a cool little ironic thing.
The identity marathon. What a surprise, even for me, as I didn't even realize what I was doing while I was doing it. And I think it is what we've been talking about this whole time. I got lost one day and was emotional thinking about my past as I walked through or ran through my old apartment complex. And I just thought to myself, man, who was I at this point in my life? I ran by my uncle's old stoop, who was, you know, one of my heroes, and saw our old apartment complex, saw where we used to play, you know, wiffle ball in the front yard. It was the only place you could play in the whole apartment complex because we had enough grass for it. And I was just thinking about who I was at that point. And that's what sparked it, where I was like, I could probably map out all these little league fields and schools and have this a similar experience. And then my markers are just, you know, my daughters or my catcher in high school at my high school with water waiting for me. So that's what I did. And as I would run up to the, let's say the marker, because you both just did a marathon too, right? As I'd run up to the marker, I would turn off my music, turn off the podcast, whatever I was listening to, and I would just think for a moment. So now I have all these markers from that time, and I have a ton of notes on it. I haven't done anything with it yet other than the fact that it was a cathartic experience. And it's one I would recommend if you can, maybe not run 26, but if you can do some sort of physical activity going back to these spaces and places, man, it can help shape to how you show up and answer a lot of questions you may have been looking for.
Now, this somehow, in some awesome way, it does help shape your business model at the same time, right? Like doing all this stuff definitely helps your coaching practice. Walk us through that. Like, let's talk about the business side of things now, yeah. Like in the trajectory of what you're looking to build. You know, the newsletter just started rolling out. I love it. I get excited every time it comes. It's a really beautiful format. It's like, it's almost a refresh me of the name, because it had something to do with baseball. If I'm not mistaken.
Touch and Base.
Touch and Base. Yes. So walk us through that and how that plays into your business model. And then I want to walk through a little bit more of like future Charlie and where that all looks.
Yeah. Thank you. So what is the newsletter? What is the framing behind it?
Sure. Let's start there. Sorry. There really wasn't much of a question. I just wanted to shift gears to the business side. Let's talk about the newsletter and then we can go to the business side.
Yeah. So I think the catalyst for the newsletter, as for the business as well, is I wanted to have fun with part of understanding these three different key pillars in what I think all leaders should be able to identify and connect to. Their mind, who they are and their identity, and the communication, right? How they're leading both actions and words. Those are the three pillars that I've seen in tech. Those are all the pillars that I would see from successful teams, coaches, while we were playing in sport. So as I watch a pregame interview, as I go watch an old Adam Sandler movie, or I'm looking at something that might have a very simple lens because we're watching a movie, I'll pull back and go, there's a huge lesson in that. And I just thought, why not create some sort of practical way to be able to share some of these tools and like go beyond the surface level laugh and say, hey, this is what they're doing here. They're speaking with conviction. Or they're standing here for a reason because they're trying to communicate to the team who's in a locker room. All the practical skills that I've learned in leadership and coaching communication of the past decade or so, I was like, let's have fun with it and bring it out to the market. What better way to do that than a newsletter? And Touching Base came from, again, this concept of me not leaning into sport and my baseball background. And now I'm fully invested in telling my story and owning every bit and piece of it. So when I start brainstorming with a good buddy and a friend who's an improv guy, we're throwing ideas out there. And he said Touching Base when we both looked at each other. And I was like, that's it. Because that's it. Just touching base.
So could you, to that tune, would you be able to talk about the importance of kind of just owning your story? I feel like a lot of young guys, myself even included, and I won't speak for you, Antonio, but like I know a lot of the young guys we connect with, us included at certain seasons of life, there's almost like this imposter syndrome people can face early on in their careers. And I think there's this evolution I've been able to observe some people go through where they get to a certain point where they just start to own their story and own that more than ever. Could you just talk through that journey for yourself and just any thoughts you have on anyone listening to this podcast?
How do you own the story and start telling? It's the most important piece. It's the key. It's a pillar in you figuring out who you are. You got to actually own it by telling it. And one way to do it, it's what we're doing here. 2 years ago, when I decided to break off from my communications firm and start my own, I was like, how am I going to tell my story? I'm going to start saying yes to podcasts, to speaking, to talking in these different capacities. And I'm also going to commit to getting on this thing called social media. And whether it's cringy or not, I'm going to start talking to the camera and figuring out what do I enjoy talking about? Not necessarily what the audience right now enjoys, like what's coming out of me naturally that I just want to like give to the world. And that's an uncomfortable feeling for a lot. Then you do it over a year and a half, 2 years, and you start to realize, okay, I'm finding my voice a bit. Then you're on the podcast and you get the question. And then you're like, I've answered this before because I have conviction in it. The only way you get conviction is to be able to do it. So when it comes to telling your story, go tell it. Go own it. When I walk into a room and I'm facilitating with executives, they would ask, or, you know, they look you up on LinkedIn. I would never tell anyone I played sport. I was like, I don't know. I'm not talking about it. Literally would not talk about it. Buried deep on my LinkedIn under volunteer was professional baseball experience. Professional baseball with the Rockies. Buried. And all of a sudden, someone's like, hey, man, you played pro ball? What did you learn? And all of a sudden, I would talk. And then I started to do it again and again. And people were like, why are you not leaning into that? Tell your damn story.
Why weren't you leaning? Why weren't you leaning into it?
Why did I not lean into it? I think I had been raised and I was around a lot of guys who that's all they identified with growing up.
Mm.
I was a junior college guy. I was not highly recruited. I felt like I just kept getting lucky and kept putting in the work and leveraging, you know, the foundations of sports psychology to even give myself a shot. I'm 6'1", 6'2". I say 6'2 with cleats on. Scouts will laugh at me. But like, I didn't have all the stuff, but I had the work and I had the mind. So I think that was a big part of it for me.
The JUCO boys are different, bro. I love it. It's a different mentality coming out of JUCO.
Different. I don't say different breed. It's just, it wasn't expected. So I had to find any way possible to make it happen.
What I love about owning your story is like, and this is something I think Landon and I also struggled with. We were reluctant at first because one, it still haven't healed from the trauma. It's still like relatively recent. And two, it's like you feel like there is this redundancy around it. And the only thing that is unique, like that's not the only thing that's unique, but like the most unique thing about us, I would argue, is our story. Nobody can take that away from us. This is our experience in this world, right? Like we can find a lot of similarities between people, but our story is our story. And Ben Newman talks about it a lot in terms of the consistency of messaging. Like Landon and I and yourself, we've all heard Ben talk about the burn, his mother, all these different things. And it's like, hey, I've heard this story a million times. Like, how is this guy doing multiple eight figures saying the same shit every single time? You start to realize that this world's a big ass place. And the world's big. So it's somebody's first time hearing it. And two, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So if your story continues to have power and those principles are working, why not continue to double down on that? Would love to know kind of how you've used that principle and crafted your story over time to keep that consistency of messaging and what that specific messaging is.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. So how have I leveraged it?
Yep.
Oh man. Well, newsletter is an example of it, but it's also just how I show up. I think in my conversations, when I am meeting a new client, or how I'm showing up with my family. If everything is, and you can't see behind me, but if everything is around presence, right? Choose presence over preference. We prefer to be doing so many different things at any given time. But if there's one thing that I can control, it is my presence, the feet, where I am here and now. It is the biggest gift we can give as a leader, but also to ourselves. And it's a practice that we forget. So I try to remind myself of that every single day I get up, whether it's in my morning, it's in my closing routine. And then it's also in the 30-minute meetings that I have, you know, with my clients or my team. The consistent message of how are you being present, not only for your team, but for yourself. Most people can only answer for somebody else. They can never ask for themselves. So I'm that annoying bug. Any of my one-on-one clients, any of my team clients, especially my one-on-one clients that I'm supposed to be coaching in the corporate world in soft skills. And then there's balloons, because I guess that's what Zoom does now.
That's crazy.
Right? The catalyst was middle of the pandemic. People were all over the place. I just stopped asking people questions. 10 minutes. We got a 30-minute meeting. 10 minutes. What are you doing for yourself today, Antonio? What are you doing for yourself, Landon? People would look at me like I was crazy. And then guess what? They'd ask me, and I'd have to answer. And guess what I started to build? A connection and relationships with people that I had no business building relationships with. And that was that was not a thing I was trying to do. I just felt like I had been doing it forever. It's all around the present moment. So I live by that.
Love it. Love it. What's the vision? Where's Charlie going?
Loaded question. How much time we got, Landon?
Yeah, we talked a lot about the present moment, but what, like, tell us a little bit more about that vision.
So I think where I'm feeling, right? I think that there's a difference about goals and kind of flow. I'm a goal person, while at the same time, I'm also a flow person. And I think where I'm going is to be able to speak a bit more than I'm doing now, right? Working with teams and having impact kind of go at a bigger scale when it comes to just messaging and how I'm positioning this. It's not just communication. It's not just performance, right? I think the identity thing is where I'm going. But having a coaching practice built with athletes, whether you're Olympian, professional, and you have expanded, you have already, you've done the thing, you've retired, and now you are in this next wave of life. I love to start developing a coaching practice where my bench, my roster is filled with those people, that then we have our methods and our approach and the way that we train. And then we are out there serving teams, athletes, organizations in corporate and business, or in corporate and sport, with this pedigree, athletic DNA, athletic mindset, athletic operating system that I think people are very intrigued by. And I think the blend of what I'm building and what I'm doing can do that. This is just the very early stages of that.
Hmm. I love that, dude. I think you articulated that so well. That's why we connect so much, me, you, and Landon, because there's so much alignment there. How can our listeners follow you? How can they connect with you?
Man, I mean, obviously the newsletter is two weeks in, touching base every Tuesday. That's one thing. Obviously, hop in there. And then, of course, the social media channels on LinkedIn. I'm definitely active on LinkedIn, and then social on Instagram. Charles L. Ruiz, CLR, is my initials, no surprise, but a simple at Charles L. Ruiz, or find me at CLR Connection.
Amazing. Well, I have to imagine that everyone that listens to this podcast has the ideal archetype of someone that would connect with you, because it's an athletic based entrepreneur podcast. And you put so many amazing words into context there. So thank you so much, brother. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be in your circle over the last 5-6 months since we've connected. So I'm excited for what's to come.
I feel the same. Thank you both for having me, man. Keep doing your thing. I love it. I love seeing it.
Appreciate you, brother.
Right on.